So good morning, and thank you to be here. Early this year, Todd approached me and said, all right, since you won the award, you need to give a presentation. And he said, you can choose whatever topic you want to give the presentation. So immediately I was thinking, you know, topic that come to my mind is fishing tips or fishing guide for dummies, you know, thinking that, you know, both Todd and Don would be beneficial to both of them. But then I decided that maybe I'll save that topic for a different venue. Instead, I'm going to talk about interspecific introgression. It's a topic that that I've been interested in since back in graduate school. In my master project, I work on gene integration and evolutions of wheat, wild wheat specifically. And for my PhD program, I actually work on interspecific substitution line. Interestingly, the substitution line actually developed by Leonard Joppa and Roy Cantrell, who is in the audience right here. So, okay, let me just start. Okay, let me start by this with this slide. Since most of us here are cotton breeder, cotton geneticists, I thought we'll start with this slide to pat ourselves on the back and say, you know, how good of a job we have done over the years in improving yield potential. However, we can't say that with regarding to fiber quality. So if you look at fiber quality in the last 40 years, fiber quality improvement, this is for fiber strength. We only made 20% gain in 40 years, and most of the gain was made in the last, well, in the previous 20 years. And if you look at the last 20 years, the amount of improvement is almost stagnant. This is fiber length, and you see a very similar pattern here. The amount of improvement for the last 40 years is only 5%, and in the last 20 years, we have not made a whole lot of improvement. So Roy has touched on the extremely low-level genetic diversity in the upland germplasm, or in Gossypium hirsutum, and specifically in upland germplasm. And just want to share with you a little bit of data from David Fung's group. They did a real good job in looking at the level of genetic diversities in the upland germplasm. So one of the interesting results that they found is if you look at the germplasm, upland germplasm as a whole, and using genetic markers, you can pretty much separate out the different subgroup, the germplasm into different subgroups, from the southeast, the Texas, the Delta group, and the southwest group. So this may indicate that there are actually regional differences or genetic diversity, reflecting differences in the regional adaptation. But if you look at some of the more recent data, this is from Laurie Heinze's group. And if you look at the upland germplasm as a whole, and this is a two-dimensional graph, you can see all the adapted upland group kind of all clustered together. So it shows that the level of diversity, despite the regional differences, is actually very, very low. So if you move a little further out on these group right here scattered around, these are more of the land races and adapted and improved hirsutum. And so these materials could potentially be very useful to increase the level of genetic diversity and potentially bring in useful allele for either fiber quality or product or yield improvement. And there's a large community effort right now in developing a very substantial size population called the Nested Association Mapping Project, utilizing these germplasm. But today I'm going to talk about something that even further out, this group right here in yellow, and And those include a lot of the tetrapod species, the sister species of Gasuppan hirsutum. So this group actually is very, very diverse. If you look at the flower morphology right here, some of these pictures are diploids as well. You look at the leaf structure, leaf shape, bowl size, and for sure, if you look at fiber, there are genetic variation in color, and for sure, there's genetic variation in fiber properties. So they do have potential in not just increasing the level of genetic diversity, but potentially bringing in useful alleles for cotton improvement. So I think most of you are familiar with the phylogenetic tree of tetraploid cotton. So genetic Gasuppan hirsutum, this is our upland cotton, came where the upland cotton germplasm came from. But there are four other species. Actually, there are we have added two more species more recently. So this slide is a little bit outdated. But let's just go with this here. There are four other species, Gasuppan tomentosum, which is a Hawaiian cotton, Gasuppan barbatans, originally from the northern part of Central America and some of the islands around that area, Gasuppan darwinii, which is endemic to Galapagos Island. It's a sister group of Gasuppan barbatans. And then at the very, very basal group here is Gasuppan mustelinum, which is endemic to the central part of South America, Brazil and that area. So my interest is to ask the question of, can we use these species, sort of sister species of Gasuppan hirsutum, to increase the level of genetic diversity of upland cotton, at the same time bring in useful alleles. Also, I must say that these four other tetrapod species cross readily with hirsutum, and the progenies are often fertile, although we do encounter complications, and I'll talk a little bit about later on. So the project really started back in 2001 with some funding from USDA IFAS. The PI of the project is Andy Patterson's, but the co-PI include Randall Bowman, Steve Brown, myself, John Ganaway, Alan Jingle, Lloyd May, and Wayne Smith. So the idea is to use these three wild species, mustelinum, tomentosum, barbatans. I know some people would not consider barbatans as being wild, especially we use Pima in this case, but they are a different species than hirsutum, so we'll consider it that way. So the problem with using these wild species is once you make crosses, the entire genome of the wild species will be segregating. And what you ended up with, lacking a better word, is a mess. You have all kinds of segregation, all kinds of different plant types. And a lot of these issues that I'm listed down here has been described in the literature. Segregation distortion is very common. The other issue is for our purpose in terms of using these materials for crop cotton improvement is they have very poor agronomic qualities. So teasing out information that you want from all the noise because of the amount of segregation that's going on in these populations is very, very difficult. So to overcome this, we use an approach called advanced backcross. And by that, we cross an elite upland and cross with one of the tetrapod species. Instead of analyzing the progeny in the F2 hybrids, we backcross it in three generations. So for each cross, we make independent backcross so that we have different lineages or what we call families for these populations. And then at the end, at the BC3 generation, what we'll do is we test them with genetic markers so that we can track the different pieces of chromatins that come from the wild species. And at the same time, we test them in the field for fiber quality. And then we perform some sort of QT analysis so they would have a better idea of where the useful allele might be located in the genome. So for Gossypium bobidens population, Wayne Smith actually did this developed this population. It contains 24 families and about 2,900 plants. For the Gossypium mustelinum population has 21 families and about 3,200 plants. Lloyd May actually started this work, but he left for the industry after this project got going, and I essentially took over this project. And the last population is Gossypium tomentosum, contains 17 families and about 300 plus individuals. John Galloway actually developed this population. So the reason we're using the Avant backcrosses is just to give you an idea, and I have talked about earlier. If you look at the early generation hybrids, such as the F2 generation, the entire genome is segregating. So it's very difficult to tease out the information that you want from the noise, because these are wild species. So after three backcrosses, you only have a few segments of the genome that's segregating coming from the wild species. So this will give us a better idea in terms of estimating the effect of QTL region. The other advantage is once you identify a QTL region, these lines are essentially semi-isogenic. So it's much easier to try to verify these QTLs as well as moving them to a more adapted genetic background. So like I said, we trace these introgression segments using genetic markers. We started with RFLP. Remember, this is back in early 2000. That was a lot of work. So we did that with the bobidens and the tomentosum population. And with the mustelinum population, we started to use SSR. By that time, SSR became more readily available. So I'm going to present a little bit on the transmission genetics. That's one of my interests. And it's the sort of information when you put all the three different populations together is just really, really fascinating. So for BACOS3 population, BACOS3F1, okay, you expect to see about 12.5% of the genome to have introgression. So in the bobidens population, what we saw is about 8.6% on average out of those 24 BC3F1 plants. So this is below the average of introgression. In the tomentosum population, the number is actually even lower. It's only 5%. So, we expect to see the same thing in the tomentosum populations, and when we get the results back, it was, you know, totally opposite. The amount of introgression in the mustelinum population is almost 2.5 times what we expected. So about like 28% overall in the 21 families. So this is just an example of the graphical genotypes of the different BC3 F1 plants. We actually have 31 different BC3 F1, but we only used 21 for subsequent analysis. But for the BC3 F1, we do have 31 different individuals. So just to lay out this slide, individual column going down right here represent the graphical genotype for individual BC3F1. So number one, this is BC3F1 number one. Okay. Remember, they're all independently derived. So they each share a separate integration history. And the blue color, can you all somewhat see? I know this is a little small, kind of color-coded. So the blue color represent chromatins that come from the hirsutum parent. And then the yellow colors are the integrase segments that came from, in this case, Gossypium mustelinum. So a couple of things that I wanted to sort of point out. So if you look at individual chromosome, okay, let's just say chromosome 25, okay, you can see in the different BC3F1 plants, you have different levels of integration in different parts of the genome, okay? Also, you have plants that have no integration at all for this particular chromosome, in this case, chromosome 25. And then you can have totally the other extreme. So BC3F1 plant number 2, the entire chromosome actually came from Gossypium mustelinum. So it's quite variable. So, and you can look at individual chromosome and sort of track the transmission of these different pieces of chromosome that come from Mustelinum. So you look at the blue dots, these are the frequency of Gustipu Mustelinum alleles in different portions of the chromosome. So if you look at across the chromosome, what you can see is, so there's some integration here in different parts of the chromosome, looking at the blue dots, okay? The average frequency is right here. This is 12%, 12.5%. So some are lower, some are higher than the expected frequency. This one here, for example, is really high. It's like 70-some percent of the individuals of the BC3F1 individual has this particular piece of DNA that coming from Gustipu Mustelinum. But also you can see there are certain regions, such as this one here, for example. Okay, this whole entire region, I can't remember what size it was, but it's tracked by about 8 or 9 different genetic markers. It has no integration at all. So we actually find this quite common. We found it more common in the tomentosum and the Barbadans population. The Mustelinum population has a whole lot more integration, but still we found about 7 or 8 different regions that do not have any integration at all. Some of this may be due to chance, but with that many regions, it's certainly the frequency that we found is much higher than due to chance alone. And the other interesting part is, if you look at the allele frequency in the BC3F2 population, so you expect 50%, right, in the BC3F2. But if you look at across the chromosome for this particular case, you see that they're consistently below the 50% mark. So the transmission in the BC3F2 actually is lower. And this is the other thing that also is interesting. This is sort of the two locus genotype, and I'll explain a little bit. Two locus genotype of the segregation, percent segregation in the BC3F2 population. Again, this is the Mustelinum. I'm using this as an example. So you have the hirsutum homozygous, heterozygous, and homozygous for the Mustelinum. Okay, and these are different families. So family B05, family B12, family B27. Again, remind you, these are all independently derived. The majority of the Gustipu Mustelinum allele, okay, seems to reside in the heterozygous state. So while the frequency is high, okay, but they all stay in heterozygous. And if you look at the homozygous class, okay, the MM class, right here, is for most cases almost non-existent. Okay, so it's quite interesting. Okay, and the other thing this particular slide show too is that this is actually a biallelic interaction. So in other words, we ask the question of, there's one segment of the chromosome, is the segregation of this piece of the chromosome affected by another piece of chromosome somewhere else? Are these segregation independent? So you expect if they're linked marker, they will be segregating together, right? Because they're genetically linked. But what we found is they're actually markers or chromosome regions that are in totally other parts of the chromosome that segregate together. So oftentimes when you see that one piece of the Mustelinum chromosome segment is present, oftentimes you can expect to see the other piece of the Mustelinum chromosome that's also present. And one is absent, the other one is absent as well. So as shown in this figure right here, that's why you see the Mustelinum segment right here, okay, is very, very much absent in most cases. The frequency, the percent genotype is very, very low. So let's switch gear and look at the possibility of using these populations for improvement. Okay, and then in our case, we're looking at fiber quality. So this slide shows the deviation of fiber length from the recurrent parent. So And this particular case of recipient Barbadans, and the recurrent parent is TAMCOT 2111, one of Wayne's material. So this is zero. So this is where the TAMCOT 2111 fiber length. So any population, so population 1, population 2, 3, so these are the mean of the entire population, and you can see that almost or more than half of the population, BC3F2 population, has fiber length that are actually greater than the recurrent parent. So that's certainly good news because it tells us that there's possible positive allele residing in these population, in these families that we can perhaps mine. This is another example, fiber strength from the Gossypium mustelinum population. So Gossypium mustelinum doesn't hardly produce any fiber. So this is fiber strength, and you can see that the number of family that actually has fiber strength better than the recurrent parent, in this case PD9442, is actually a whole lot smaller. There's only five families that has fiber strength greater than PD9442. This is BC3F2. We actually carry these generation forward a little bit more. So we tested them again in the BC3F2 derived F4 family. So we have replicated trial on this population, on some of these populations, and we can see, we can pick up some, you know, possible positive value from some of the other families. So it suggests that, you know, part of the problem is these populations are quite diverse still with respect to fiber quality, and it's difficult to, again, tease out the noise from the actual information that we're trying to obtain. The other possibility, too, is because these things are still segregating. Remember, most of the mustelinum allele reside in a heterozygous state. So perhaps you know, once we do two or three more self-generation, they kind of revert back more to the hirsutum state. We don't know which really the case, but I suspect they're probably a combination of both. So I'm not going to go into the QTLs that we map. Needless to say, we map a lot of QTLs. There's, you know, a number of publications that describe these QTLs. But what I'm going to talk a little bit about is we actually spend a little bit of time, well, we spend a lot of time trying to sort of proof a concept to really validate these QTLs. If you look at the literature, there are a slew of QTLs being mapped, particularly for fiber quality. Very little of them has been validated, verified, and I think I understand the reason why. It took longer to verify these QTLs than to map them. So this is a nice little story about a QTL coming from Gossypium Barbadans, chromosome 1. And what we did was we took one of the isogenic line that is still in heterozygous state, and well, actually three different families. So these three families has heterozygous plants. So we pull those heterozygous plants, okay, because they're still segregating, and then we derive population to obtain the homozygous state from these plants, from these isogenic plants. So for population 01, for example, okay, so there's one plant that is heterozygous for this QTL region. So we self that, and then the next generation we use markers to sort out which one carry homozygous with the QTL and which one homozygous without the QTL. And then we do yield trials in two years, things two different locations. And if you look at the data right here, it show beautifully that this particular QTL region has an additive effect in improving, in increasing fiber length. So this is another example. This is a QTL for fiber strength coming from Gossypium mustelinum. In this particular case, it's a little bit different, a different approach. We took an isogenic line that has really good fiber strength, but at the same time also has this QTL. We crossed it with three different parents. We crossed with Deltaplan 50, HH26, and Akela, SJ4. And then we try to find that QTL again. And so What we found was that in the KLA-SJ4 population, we did found the QTL to have a positive effect. Similarly, in HS26, we found the QTL with the similar effect. You see they're significantly different, but not in the DP50 background. So this may come as a surprise, but the reality is we've seen enough of these QTL analysis. They're actually more of a norm than exception. So this is sort of a different data set, but a lot of these QTL actually do come from integration. They come from Barbedon's integration. And if you look at all these QTLs, okay, listed right here, these are different QTLs for microneer strength and upper half mean. Okay, we cross it with these five different We cross it with these five different parents, and then we ask the question of do these QTLs, can we identify these QTLs in these five different genetic background? And so this is sort of a heat map, if you will. Blue color meaning there's no QTL. What color is this? A little bit less blue. would indicate there is possible association. Okay, yellow would be a little bit higher level of association between 2 and 2.5. Okay, so orange is 2.5 to 2.9, and red would be above 3. So for most QTL analysis, unless you're using Monte Carlo simulation to determine a threshold, this is sort of a standard way of declaring a QTL. So if you look at these different populations, so you're looking at these QTLs, for example, okay, microneer number 2, okay, QTL on chromosome 11, we only see significance in this one genetic background, whereas the other two is somewhat significant, and then there's other three different backgrounds. There's no association whatsoever. So most of these population has between 150 to 200 individuals, so population size is not the cause of this. You can see some that has a little bit better association. So we have at least two families show strong association. And then only one rare cases where this QTL here, upper half mean of chromosome 25, where you see all families, all five genetic background, where this QTL shows its effect. Again, we expect to see every QTL to show that effect, particularly if our interest in using it for breeding purpose. But unfortunately, that's more of an exception rather than the rule. And looking at the effect of the QTL, so this is one of the QTL for upper half mean. Only two genetic backgrounds, showing significant association. Okay, delta point 50 and Georgia 89, and the amount of phenotypic variation explained by this QTL is about 14%, so they're about the same. Again, we would expect to see that to be the case. At least we hope that to be the case. But that's more the exception rather than the rule. Okay, this is another QTL, chromosome 16, for fiber strength. You see that out of five population, okay, these three populations show significant association, and the amount of genetic variation ranging from about 3% to all the way to about 9%. So quite variable, okay? And this is just another example. I'm not going to go into it. I know I'm running a little low on time. I'm not going to say a whole lot in this other than, we are trying to fine map some of these QTL regions, but it's going really slow. It's even worse than trying to verify these QTLs. Real quickly, this is the last slide. I just want to acknowledge the collaborators in this project that I have mentioned earlier. Also, for my lab at least, the full person that's responsible for doing most of the work, Bohua was a postdoc in the lab, and he did majority of the genotyping work for the muscle atom population. Xinyan Chen did the verifying of the QTL for chromosome 1 QTL, and also doing some of the fine mapping work. Pawan Kumar did some of the QTL validation for the strength QTL, And Dr. Nino Brown, is he in the audience? Yeah. So brand new Dr. Brown did the QTL validation for the Mustelinum FibroStrand QTL. So it's a very, very productive project. We published 15 publications so far, and it's still a few more coming from Nino. So that's all I have, and I appreciate your attention.
We'll take two questions. Any questions out there?
We have not really looked at epigenetics at all. As far as heterosis, you know, I guess we call it transgressive segregation. We do find quite a bit of them. We really have not paid attention in terms of finding out the mechanism behind it.